Chapter 7. Solon Tofusen led the nag up Sidlin Way between the gaudy, close-packed manses of the great families of Cenaria. Many of the houses were less than a decade old. Others were older, but had been recently remodeled. The buildings along this one street were qualitatively different from all the rest of Cenarian architecture. These had been made by those hoping their money could purchase culture. All were ostentatious, trying to rival their neighbors by their exotic design, whether in builders' fantasies of Ladesian spires, or Friaki pleasure domes, or in the more accurately articulated Alatiran mansions, or perfect-scale imitations of famous Siorin summer palaces. There was even what he thought he recognized from a painting as a bulbous Imuri temple, complete with prayer flags. Slave money, he thought. It wasn't slavery that appalled him. On his island, slavery was common, but not like it had been here. These manses had been built on pit fighters and baby farms. It had been out of his way, but he'd walked through the warrens to see what the silent half of his new home city was like. The squalor there made the wealth here obscene. He was tired. Though not tall, he was thick. Thick through the stomach, and, mercifully, still thicker through the chest and shoulders. The nag was a good horse, but she was no war horse, and he had to walk her as often as he rode. The large estate loomed ahead, differentiated from the others not so much by the size of the buildings as by the amount of land within the walls. Where the manses were packed side by side, the estate sprawled. Guards presided over gates of ironwood rather than intricate grillwork, gates built long ago for defense, not decoration. The gate of the first estate bore the Jadwin trout inlaid with gold leaf. Through the sallyport, he saw a lavish garden filled with statues, some marble, some covered with beaten gold. No wonder they have a dozen guards. All the guards were professional, and a few furlongs short of handsome, which gave credence to the rumors about the Duchess, and he was more than happy to pass the Jadwin estate. He was a handsome man, with olive skin, black eyes, and hair still black as a night, untouched by the gray shadows of dawn. Sharing a house with a voracious duchess whose husband left on frequent and lengthy embassies was trouble he didn't need.
Not that I'll find less where I'm going.
Dorian, my friend, I hope this was genius. He didn't want to consider the other possibility.
I am Solon Tofusen. I am here to see Lord Gyre, Solon said as he arrived in front of the Gyre estate's gate.
The Duke?
The guard asked. He pushed his helm back and scraped a hand across his forehead. The man's a simpleton.
Yes, Duke Gyre.
He spoke slowly and with more emphasis than was necessary, but he was tired.
That's a crying shame, the guard said.
Solon waited, but the man didn't elaborate.
Not a simpleton, an ass.
Is Lord Gyre gone?
Nope.
So that's what this is about.
The red hair should have tipped me off.
Solon said, I know that after millennia of being raided, the smarter Seorans moved inland, leaving your ancestors on the coast. And I realize that when Sethi pirates raided your village, they carried off all the presentable women, again leaving your ancestors. So, through no fault of your own, you're both stupid and ugly. But might you attempt to explain how Lord Gyre is both gone and not gone?
You can use small words.
Perversely, the man looked pleased. No marks on your skin, no rings through your face, and don't even talk like a fish. And you're fat for a fish, too. Let me guess. They offered you to the sea, but the sea gods wouldn't take you, and when you washed up on the beach, you were nursed by a troll who mistook you for one of her own.
She was blind,
Solon said.
and when the man laughed, he decided he liked him.
"Duke Gyre left this morning. He won't be back," the guard said.
"He won't be back? You mean ever?"
"Not my place to talk about it, but no, not ever, unless I miss my guess. He's gone to command the garrison at Screaming Winds."
"But you said Lord Gyre isn't gone," Solon said.
"The Duke named his son the Gyre until he returns."
"Which will be never."
"You're quick for a fish. His son Logan is the Gyre."
"Not good." For the life of him, Solon couldn't remember if Dorian had said Duke Gyre or Lord Gyre. Solon hadn't even considered that there might be two heads of House Gyre. If the prophecy was about Duke Gyre, he needed to get riding, now. But if it were about his son, Solon would be leaving his charge at the time he needed him most.
"May I speak with Lord Gyre?"
"Can you use that steel?" the guard asked. "If you can't, I'd suggest you hide it."
"Excuse me?"
"Don't say I didn't warn you. Come with me."
The guard called to another atop the wall, who came to hold the gate while the Siorin led Solon into the estate. A stable boy took the nag, and Solon kept his sword.
He couldn't help but be impressed.
The Gyre estate had a permanence about it, the deliberate gravitas of an old family. Acanthus was planted inside the walls and out, growing from red soil Solon knew must have been brought in especially for the purpose. The thirsty plants hadn't just been chosen to keep beggars or thieves from the walls. They also had long associations with Alatiran nobility. The manse itself was similarly daunting, all heavy stone and broad arches and thick doors that could withstand a siege engine. The only compromise strength had made with beauty were the climbing blood roses that framed each door and every ground-floor window. Against the backdrop of black stone and iron-barred windows, their perfect red hue was striking. Solon didn't pay attention to the ringing of steel until the guard walked past the entry to the manse and around the back of the building. Here, with a view across the plith to castle scenario, several guards were watching as two men, bundled in practice armor, pummeled each other. The smaller man was retreating, going back in circles as the larger man's blows thudded on his shield. The smaller man stumbled, and his opponent bull-rushed, leveling him with a shield like a ram. The man raised his sword, but the next blow sent it flying, and the next rang his helmet like a bell. Logan Gyre tore off his helmet and laughed, helping the guard to his feet. Solon's heart sank. This was Lord Gyre? He was a child in a giant's body, baby fat still on his face. He couldn't have been more than 14, probably younger. Solon could imagine Dorian laughing. Dorian knew he didn't like children. The Siorin guard stepped forward and spoke quietly to Lord Gyre.
"Hello," the boy lord said, turning to Solon.
"Marcus tells me you fancy yourself quite a swordsman."
"Are you?"
Solon looked at the Siorin, who gave him a self-satisfied smile.
"His name is Marcus?"
Even the names in this country were a mess. With little regard for people's origins, Alatiran names like Marcus or Lucien mixed freely with Lodrakari names like Redo or Daedra, Siorin names like Hideo or Shizumi, and normal Sonarian names like Alain or Philine. About the only names most people wouldn't name their children were the slaves' names common in the Warrens, like Scar or Hairlip.
"I can hold my own, Lord Gyre. But it is words I wish to exchange with you, not blows."
"If I go now, my old mare and I can make it to the garrison in 6, maybe 7 days.
"We will speak then, after we spar. Marcus, get him some practice armor." The men looked pleased,
and Solon saw that they loved this young lord like he was their own son, and laughed too easily and spoiled him. He was suddenly the gyre, and the men were still entranced by the novelty of the idea.
"I don't need it," Solon said.
The chuckling stopped, and the men looked at him.
"You want to spar without armor?"
Logan asked.
"I don't want to spar at all, but if it is your will, I shall consent. But I won't fight with a practice blade."
The men hooted at the prospect of seeing this short Sethi fight their giant, unarmored. Only Marcus and one or two others looked troubled. With the thick armor Logan wore, there was little danger that he would be seriously injured, even with a sharp sword. But the danger was there. In his eyes, Solon saw that Logan knew it too. He was suddenly doubting if he should have been quite so brash with someone who he knew nothing about, someone who might well wish him harm. Logan was looking again at Solon's stocky build.
"My lord," Marcus said, "maybe it would be best if..."
"Agreed," Logan said to Solon. He pushed his helmet on and locked the visor. He unlimbered his sword and said,
"Ready when you are."
Before Logan could react, Solon jabbed his fingers through the boy's visor and grabbed the nosepiece. He yanked Logan forward and twisted. The boy slammed into the ground with a grunt. Solon drew a knife from Logan's belt and held it to the boy's eye, his knee resting on the side of Logan's helmet, holding it in place.
"Do you yield?" Solon asked.
The boy's breaths were labored.
"I yield."
Solon released him and stood, brushing the dust from the leg of his breeches. He didn't offer to help Lord Gyre stand. The men were quiet. Several had drawn swords, but none moved forward. It was obvious that if Solon had meant to kill Logan, he would have already done it. No doubt they were thinking about what Duke Gyre would have done to them if such a thing had happened.
"You're a fool boy, Lord Gyre," Solon said. "A buffoon performing for men you may one day have to ask to die for you."
"He said Duke Gyre. Surely Dorian said Duke Gyre. But he sent me here. Surely he would have sent me to the garrison directly if he meant the Duke. The prophecy wasn't about me. Dorian couldn't have known that I would be held up, that I would get to the city this late, could he?"
Logan removed his helmet, and he was red-faced. But he didn't let his embarrassment flare into anger. He said,
I deserved that.
And I deserved the manhandling you just gave me. Or worse. I'm sorry. It is a poor host who assaults his guests.
You know they've been losing on purpose, don't you?"
Logan looked stricken. He glanced at the man he'd been fighting as Solon arrived, then stared at his own feet. Then, as if it took an effort of will, he raised his eyes to Solon's.
"I see that you speak true. Though it shames me to learn it, I thank you."
And now his men looked ashamed. They'd been letting him win because they loved him, and now they had shamed their lord. The men weren't just pained, they were in misery.
"How does this boy command such loyalty? Is it just loyalty to his father?"
As he watched Logan look at each of the men in turn, staring until each met his gaze and then looked away, Solon doubted that. Logan let the pained silence sit and grow.
"In 6 months' time," Logan said, addressing the men, "I will serve at my father's garrison. I will not sit safely in the castle. I will fight, and so will many of you. But since you seem to think sparring is entertainment, very well. You will entertain yourselves by sparring until midnight, all of you. Tomorrow we will start training, and I expect all of you to be here an hour before dawn. Understood?"
"Yes, sir."
Logan turned to Solon.
"Sorry about that, Master Tofusen. About all of it. Please call me Logan. You'll stay for dinner, of course, but can I also have the servants prepare a room for you?
Yes, Solon said. I think I'd like that.